Hi, welcome to Pulling the Threads, a podcast dedicated to understanding the story behind our clothes. I'm your host, Jancy Quinn, and this podcast will follow my adventures in learning more about sustainable apparel and exploring how we can all have beautiful things without harm. I'm a reformed fashion addict and overshopper, but also a lifelong sewer, maker, and lover of the outdoors and our environment. A few years ago, I realized that as beautiful as fashion can make you feel, the industry can be pretty ugly for the people who make our clothes and for the planet. I'm now on a mission to learn about what it means to have eco-friendly, mindful, sustainable, or socially conscious apparel, whichever term you prefer. My goal with this podcast is that we'll learn together, share ideas, and talk about the positive changes we can all make.
But as I was just like washing the dishes and I was thinking, like, you and I probably share an interesting point of view in that we both like truly care about the environment and sustainability, but we also really love fashion. So it's like, it's an interesting tension. Yeah. Like I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting because not everyone I've talked to is as like fashion minded as us.
A lot of people have forsaken it and just are like, oh, I don't care. I don't like shopping. I don't like this. I'm like, I love shopping.
And for me, it's like my personal expression. Like I love how people express their style. Excited today. I'm with Chelsea Evans. We first met when we were both working at Nordstrom and then have since attended the Portland Sustainable Fashion Forum together and just become good friends and, you know, relationship, shopping, sustainability, all the things.
I am still at Nordstrom where I really lead our environmental sustainability work. And I guess I should give a caveat at the start, which is that I'm speaking on behalf of myself today, not on behalf of the company, even though, you know, that's where my work's happening. But yeah, I really lead our environmental sustainability strategy. I work on a lot of our human rights topics and kind of generally corporate social responsibility and ESG work overall. So it really can span, you know, climate change topics, environmental impact of our products, of services that the company offers, things growing in the circularity space, everything in between. So yeah, I get to do a lot. It's fun.
Can you walk through just like your background?
Yeah.
A little bit of like how you became interested in sustainability and what's brought you to where you are today?
Yeah, totally. I think this is always an interesting question because I know I have looked at a lot of other people's backgrounds over time as I've been growing in my, you know, career path. And you know, they're not the same. Like you can get some inspiration, right? If you see someone who's leading it at some company you admire and say, oh, well, this person came through this random path. And this person maybe has a path similar to mine, which is nice to know. Mine was communication. So I really just started doing communications, PR, even like social media back in the day, I say it in quotes, marketing. I do not know how to do marketing. But when you're working in nonprofits, that sometimes is what you might call it. So I thought I would
You would wear a lot of hats, I'm sure.
Every hat. Yeah. I mean, you just sort of try it out, whatever needs to be done. Suddenly I'm writing an editorial calendar for a social channel. Like, I don't know what I'm doing when I was younger.
But you roll with it.
You do it. I thought I would always stay in nonprofits and like education, very, you know, mission-driven work, which I mean, it's funny, right? It comes a little full circle, but I couldn't have predicted where I am now. Doing comms and stuff like that for about 5 years in some nonprofits, like a science museum and one that served people with disabilities. And then I wound up moving into the retail space. And I would say I really started working in the retail space, and now I work in more fashion and retail, which would include e-commerce now so much too, but with several other, you know, large companies, Target and Gap being two of them, and did a master's degree in international business. So really got a lot more business grounding, which has been super helpful to like understand, you know, okay, what does my marketing team need to know or care about? What does my finance team need to know? How can I work with investor relations and facilities and operations and transportation? I mean, it just spans everything. And that's a super fun part of this kind of work is, you know, you get to have your hands in all these different departments.
I love it because you had like a super solid foundation in impact and nonprofit, but then you layered in business thinking, critical thinking. Do you feel like your master's was critical to your career path today?
For me, I feel like it was critical, but I know, and I say this, I'm looking at Jancy in the face on video right now while we chat for anyone listening. Yes. And she and I've had this conversation before, which is like, I don't think it's necessary for everyone. depending on what your experience is and if you are learning the right things, getting to work on the right kinds of projects, and maybe just depending, you know, what kind of an organization or company you're at, who your leaders are, and if you're learning from them, I don't think it's required. For me, I needed to learn how to learn again. I needed exposure to some new topics. For me, it was great. It was a confidence builder. You know, it was like a ton of exposure. Sure. And it was this funky international affairs degree or international business degree. And so getting a super global context, which I think has served me mm-hmm. well. But other folks have, you know, I'm seeing roles posted for people with a lot of tech skills now. I mean, there's a lot of like data analytics moving into sustainability world or I don't know, sometimes really specialized communicators, which is important. Like that's really helpful if your comms partner knows what to say. It can really depend. That's why I usually tell people like, hey, literally go on LinkedIn. What company do you think is doing a good job? Okay, figure out who's leading it or who's working on it and see what they did. Like, did they work in nonprofit? Did they work in activism? Did they work in politics? Sure. I don't know. What do they do? And like, is that a path you could get on?
I love helpful. That. I've also heard, you know, I've been wanting to move into the sustainability first space for years. And I finally decided to just create my own path mm-hmm. and, you know, job shadow and do research. But I've talked to a lot of people that were like, don't discount the experience you've had. You don't necessarily need like a science degree in textile mm-hmm. sustainability. But, you know, so much of it is like, yes, there's really incredible initiatives, but how do you tell that story and connect with consumers? So don't discount your communications or marketing background. You know, there's so many pieces to it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, even as a person who this is my career, this is my experience now. And, you know, I was never a product developer. I was never a textiles, you know, sure. developer or like, I'm not a scientist. I don't know. So there are plenty of, you know, ways to work in this space that even a person with years of experience in the space, you know, couldn't and can't do. I'm not qualified. I would need a specialized partner. I mean, I work with specialized partners on,
sure,
you know, a carbon footprint, for example. It's like, I have no shame saying, hey, I'm not a climate scientist. Like, sorry, I'm not an emissions right. scientist. Like someone right. else knows that math and can put it together. You know, I can teach myself a lot. I think in this, if you're willing to teach yourself, I think, you know, Jansi, you've done that too, right? Like it's just a matter of learning. And then you know it. It's not hidden information. It's not, you know, it's just a matter of learning. But I'm probably not going to teach myself, you know, intense science.
Right. This like point. Chemical makeups of different, you know, fabrics. But no. also it's just knowing the question. I think it's like being curious mm-hmm. and asking questions yep. and caring. You know, it's like, yeah. okay, I care. And it seems like a lot of it is like just challenge the status quo. Like, okay, this mm-hmm. is how we've always done retail or produce clothes, but like, why? Mm-hmm. What could we do different? You know,
seems yeah, like just a huge piece of it. You know, I give advice to, you know, colleagues or other folks where it's like, listen, I'm not going to be in the room to ask the question as the sustainability sure. person, you know, but you are. And if you're seeing a decision get made and it has, you know, an externality, it has an impact on the environment or people, you know, that seems a little concerning based on what you know, which because you're an educated person that has read some of these same reports or, you know, follows the same, I don't know, Instagram accounts and is learning, then ask like, well, what happens if we choose this? Like, what does it mean if we have to airship something overnight as opposed to shipping it on a big cargo ship that takes time? Like, what does it mean to rush an order? What does it mean to push extra, you know, capacity to a factory where it's producing that it hadn't planned for? Like, what's the impact of that? Because I think sometimes if you ask and then answer that question, you know, people don't mean to do right. something that might be harmful or have a more negative impact, but the dots don't always connect. I think my job definitely is to connect dots, but other people are fully capable of doing that and trying to help make better choices.
That's so interesting because I think it's not necessarily ill intent,
no.
but so much of it is just unawareness and like, oh, I didn't realize if we air ship it versus, you know, air yeah. versus ship that there's mm-hmm. a huge carbon impact. It's like, yeah. well, okay, do we really need it here as fast as we thought we did? You know, so
yeah. I think that's true for so much shopping, right? Like, oh, yes. you're buying some socks on the internet. Like, do you desperately need those socks tomorrow? Is it critical? Or, you know, can you get them next Thursday? Like, is that fine?
Right.
In which case,
can you order it online? Locally?
Could you just pop by a store? I mean, cautiously yeah. with a mask on, et cetera. It's a pandemic, yes. but, you know, can you just go wait an extra day, you know, oh, you're ordering, you know, shampoo. You probably yep. can get shampoo nearby. It would be my opinion. And that's not to say I've never, you know, ordered mm-hmm. toilet paper on the internet. I have, but you know, I think you get to choose that every time you buy something of do I need to, does it matter? Can I wait? Yep.
Yeah. I often think we've chosen convenience at the cost of everything else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this pandemic has forced so much of us to rethink our, you know, quote unquote needs, or, you know, do I need all the things? Do I mm-hmm. need them immediately? And just, I think that's the biggest thing we can all do is just pause. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the mindless consumption that's so scary to me, but it's like, just pause. Like, do I need it? Can I borrow it? Can I get it locally? You know, are there just to stop and think instead of just click buy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is probably true. And just, I mean, gosh, well, now that I'm just working from home, staying inside, you know, how right. old are those flared leggings that I'm wearing from my undergrad years? Why do I still have these? I don't know. They've got holes in them, but, you know, no one sees the bottom anymore. <It doesn't matter.
laughs> Okay, so stepping like way back, I love to think about like vocabulary a little mm-hmm. bit, like how... So I, you know, we hear like sustainable apparel, mm-hmm. ethical, circular, oh, like
yeah.
in your mind, like what it's so I guess the catch-all term that people might understand is like sustainable apparel, sustainability.
Yeah.
How would you define that?
I mean, I don't even like to define that. Like, I don't think that there is such a thing as a sustainable brand. Not really.
Yep.
I don't really think there's such a thing as sustainable fashion, you know, not really, if you really want to get into the nitty gritty, which not everyone has time for every day. So it's mm-hmm. not always worth, you know, semantics and a little battle over that. But I mean, what I would say is something can be more sustainable. I think a brand can be more sustainable. It has, you know, it's generally making more sustainable choices. And if I were talking about a brand, I want to see something across the board. I want to see, oh, what are you doing on materials? What are you doing on manufacturing? How are you thinking about packaging? You know, what happens to stuff when you're done with it? And I want to know that it encompasses social and environmental sustainability. I think you could call it human rights. You could call it social responsibility or ethical something. But you could also probably call it just social and environmental sustainability. You know, both of those things put in place and I think thoughtfully with an eye toward the future, right? That it's not, you're not using people, you're not using resources in ways that yep. just can't keep going. Like, it's not fair. Gosh, what else about this? I think on a product, you know, you can, it's always product by product. I love working on product sustainability. I think it's so interesting. And there are just so many ways that a product can be more sustainable. And it's often really difficult for everything about a product to be quote unquote sustainable. Like, it's just not real, but you can say, we've chosen a better raw material. You know, we've chosen to package this in a way that when you're done with it, it can be recycled, or we will make sure that it gets recycled if you get it back to us. Stuff like that. Those things are better, definitely. But just nothing's perfect. Like, everything is, it's stuff that's coming out into the world and has to go somewhere. Certainly things that are used tend to be more sustainable. It's living a much longer life, right? You're buying yeah. something that's already been made. It's already been used. You're going to use it. It feels new to you. So it's going to stay in your closet for the same amount of time.
And you're not then taking new raw materials and, right. you know, the whole manufacturing and water process. It's like, okay, we already did this. Let's mm-hmm. repair it. Let's mm-hmm. sell it. Somebody else might still love it.
Yeah. I mean, I love caring for things like gently. Yes. I think that's a huge piece. And, I'm not mm-hmm. even sure in our space if we spend as much time as we could talking about that, of like, just be nice to your clothes, you know, like yes. wash on cold and hang them to dry so they don't shrink in the dryer. Like, how many times have you shrunk your favorite thing by throwing right. it in the dryer? I mean, I'll be honest, I haven't done it in a long time because I did that as a teenager and then my mom would dry things and then I'm, you know, yeah. yelling at my mom as a teenager.
Totally. I started doing my own laundry in like eighth grade because I didn't want my clothes. Because I had a, you know, I babysat, I bought my own clothes. It's like, I didn't want my mom shrinking or like dyeing the whole load pink. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I am so with you. I think it's such a generational difference of like mending, going to shoe repair, you know, just caring for your things, putting them away every season.
Like even taking off your boots, like your, whether it's snow boots or like leather boots, like make sure they're like cleaned and conditioned and then put them away in a box for the rest of the year, you know, now that it's spring. And then you pull them out next year and it's like, oh, wow, these are, you know, I've worn these for two seasons and they look great. Like these are, you know, still in great condition. And if I decide I don't want them, like they're not the style that I want anymore, I just am not going to wear them. You know, they have heels on them and now I work from home and I refuse to ever wear heel, whatever. Well, you know what? They're in like awesome shape and really easy to take somewhere locally and sell them and say, hey, someone else might want these. I kept really good care of them.
So. I love that. I've personally shifted to truly only buying like used and consigned things or swapping with friends. I mean, except for like underwear and running shoes. Like I try and buy used items, but I love it because, I mean, it used to almost be like, oh, you wouldn't mention that you got it consigned. And now huge brands are setting up their own, you know, repair, resale, consignment. I mean, high-end fashion brands are doing it themselves. We've seen, you know, The RealReal come in a big way, ThredUp, you know, what are your thoughts there? And you guys, I know you had the chance to launch a test as well. So like, what are your thoughts on like used and upcycled?
Yeah. I mean, I've been shopping that way for a long time too. Specifically, I would say it really, you know, became the norm for me when I lived in Chicago. I lived very close to a Crossroads trading company store in Lincoln Park in Chicago. And I would shop there super regularly. But I should also say, you know, I'm calling in right now talking with you from my parents' house in Kansas. Like, I come from a place in a world that it's like, oh, frugality, you know, frugality is valued. You know, totally like shopping garage sales, love a find at a garage. They'll still love that. Like a flea market or antique store, definitely. So for me, it wasn't a huge jump to clothes because I think you can get great value. You know, I'm thinking back to some different scores over time, which was like this beautiful blue silk, like slip dress wouldn't be the right word. It had like short sleeves, but it was kind of a boxy cut of a silk dress from Banana Republic originally. And I think I paid $14 for it. That dress was amazing. I don't know. What else have I found that are great? I've definitely bought handbags used. I mean, they're, you can check the condition and no problem.
And sometimes they're even better because they've been like the leather's been worn in really beautifully. And it's almost like, it's so special, and not every girl walking down the street's going to have your handbag.
Yeah, it can be fun if you, I mean, if you go too far down the rabbit hole of handbags, you get excited about maybe a certain design that's from years past, and you're like, oh, I can still get a hold of this, you know, online, and there are ways to, you know, buy it and feel pretty confident that it's authentic and, you know, really enjoy having something one of a kind. And yeah, I bought jeans certainly secondhand. And it's like, oh yeah, they're broken in and they just fit perfectly. And like jeans, I mean, jeans are so hard to buy. It doesn't matter if they're new or used. Like it's jeans.
It's just hard.
Tries to find them to fit their body. It's difficult. I love it. Then cost per wear becomes like, you know, a penny, nothing. Like it just, you wear them forever. I love resale. I think it's exciting. I think it's a super exciting space. It's just tricky, I know, because we, as you know, so many clothes are produced and not everything is as resellable. And I think that's where, you know, you're seeing a movement toward circularity. I think certainly the work that's happening in true textile, you know, recycling is really important and exciting. I know you've had some chats and conversations with folks that are working on that, including like repair, but also like fully chemical or mechanical recycling. And I'm really hoping to see that space grow. I'm hoping to see us know what to do with things when they're just not usable, even like socks and underwear, like you mentioned, you know, where it's like, I don't think anybody's going to buy these. And, you know, I don't want to throw them away. I hate throwing stuff in the trash. But sometimes you don't quite know what to do with it anymore. So,
And yeah, I think it's so interesting because you mentioned it as well, like taking care of your things, but it almost starts with, and I think you and I are in the same space. Like, I love clothing. I am not wearing a burlap sack. Like I love clothing. I love fashion. I love new things, like new for me.
You're right.
So you know, it is true. Like, you don't have to like stop buying things, but buy things and buy well-made things, you know, like a fabulous pair of boots that you care for can last 20 years, but then like, how can you extend the life of it? Can you buy, can you supplement with used? Can you, you know, really think about what are the materials or was this ethically or sustainably
made? I think a lot about the materials. I mean, even just if you start to pay attention to which of your clothes have lasted a long time and you realize like, oh, some fabrics, like they just don't wash very well. They get weird after they've been washed. I'm personally like, there are clearly environmental impacts related to dry cleaning, but I also just don't like taking things to go get dry cleaned. Like it's extra steps. It's just complexity that cost. I don't want. It's cost. Yeah. It's like, there's so many downsides to this. I don't want to do it. So even things sometimes that are dry clean only, I wash at home and I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You know, sometimes it's fine.
Totally.
While it's not. So I try not to buy things like that perhaps, but some fabrics, they're going to fall apart. Or you know, you're looking at an item and you maybe look at the stitching and it's like, you know, this stitching doesn't look great. It doesn't look like it's probably going to hold that, you know, hem. It seems like one of those hems that's going to start to come unraveled. And then I'm going to have to pull out my weak sewing skills and try to put it back together or just wear it with an unraveling hem for as long as that lasts. So sometimes something like that's like, yeah, I'm going to put that back. I don't want it.
Going back a second, I love when you were defining sustainability and you said, you know, more sustainable because, you know, probably the most sustainable item of clothing is the one you already own, you know, but that's not practical. People want to change their style. They want to, you know, try things and fashion changes, textiles change. Who do you think's doing it well? Is there anything? And I like that you said looking 360, not just... our whole line's cotton, but we haven't looked at the people who make our clothes, you know?
Right.
But like, who are the brands that you think are doing it well?
I mean, there are a lot that are doing it well or making big efforts. I think one that's in the Seattle area I recommend a lot is Girlfriend Collective. I think they're taking a broad approach. I also really like that they use like a lot of diversity, you know, in all of their ads and who their models are, you know, age, body type, race, like it's just broad. And I really like that. That's been cool to see.
Recently turned on to them and their clothes they just look so comfortable. And you're right. Like the diversity of the models that they use is incredible. And they really tell you the story of like why we like this item, why it costs a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of brands. I mean, I've been having some conversations with Landon Nash at Tact and Stone this year.
Okay.
So it's a newer, it's a menswear brand. I think it's cool that he's working in for men's clothing. There are fewer brands that are doing as much in men's clothing. And I think it's partially because men are not asking for this kind of item as much. Whatever reason, as much as women or as much as people who are shopping for kids' clothes. I think you see it in kids' gear, baby gear, and kids' clothes for sure. So, you know, he's working with a lot of more sustainable materials and I think has a really strong grasp of the manufacturing, you know, processes that they're using. That one's been cool. Gosh, I hate name dropping because I know I'll forget, you know, folks that are doing cool work. There are some really big brands. I think we see a lot around like, you know, little, you know, I'm saying it, sustainable brands, like people that, you know, that's what they're looking for. And it's like, I don't know, like Timberland has invested a ton in the leather working group. Like they're making all their leather. I think Eileen Fisher is doing this too. Like they're making sure their leather is coming from places where they're tanning it safely and taking care of the workers who are exposed to chemicals related to tanning leather. And that's amazing. Great. And I personally, I'll say this, like it, you know, I don't think it's that controversial, but I love buying leather. I think it's really durable. And for me, that's worth it rather than a shoe that I maybe will only get to wear for 1 or 2 years, seasons, because it'll break down if it's not, you know, quality, nice, thick, sturdy leather. Like I can take care of that for so long. I know it's a byproduct for the most part. I'm trying to learn a little bit more about brightly colored leather. I don't know if you've ever, have you dug into this? I'm like, I'm nervous about bright colors. You know, it's a new one for me. I think black and brown are better.
Yeah. And it's interesting because the chemicals of those dyes and even like, you know, naturally colored cotton is so much better than a dyed cotton. So, you know, that's where it's like, every choice you make, to your earlier point, it's like has an impact.
It's a lot. I mean, so I think, much. I think I would say I try to avoid viscose. Like, I think viscose has a lot of question marks, you know, not even question marks, some of it's known, but there's a lot you can't know about where it came from. And like, there's a huge deforestation and, you know, chemical impacts there. It's like, you know, if I can just pick a different fabric, I think that'd be better.
And isn't that interesting? If like a lot of times people ask me, you know, what can I do? And it's like, well, start with buying natural fibers, like start with linen and cotton, bamboo. And like, that is at least a little bit better, but
only a little bit. Be careful with bamboo. I've had this conversation recently because that's what turns into.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Well, you know, you're putting me on the spot for things where, again, I'm not a textile scientist, but
sure.
Okay, bamboo is very hard. This is the layperson's explanation. This is how I would say it to my mom. Bamboo, right? Very hard, if you think of it growing. To make it soft into a fabric, you're going to need a lot of really heavy chemicals to soften it. So while bamboo might be a fast growing, you know, product.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's really resource intensive to turn it into fabric. And that is concerning. So I think sometimes it is one that can be overhyped
as
a better product. If it's a fabric, I mean, people are using bamboo for lots of other things too.
Yep.
But I just would want to know that it's processed in a facility where the workers are not exposed to extreme solvents and, you know, other chemicals that will make it soft. And it gets touted as, you know, this is biodegradable, you know, it's going to break down.
It's like, growing. Okay, yeah, it's replenishable.
You're
right.
Skipping a few critical steps here, you know, and that's just tricky. I mean, even cotton, like, I know we both keep saying this and I know we both know it, but for the sake of the podcast, you know, obviously like something organic, something grown with water that's used responsibly, like cotton is a really tricky fabric too, because it's extremely water intensive and often grown in places where water is in short supply. So it's tough.
And then there's, you know, I love, I think we've talked about Evernew before, like they're actually breaking down used cotton t-shirts and turning it into
synthetic fabrics.
So they may have pivoted, but they started with breaking down cotton and then turning it into like a raw new virgin fiber that could be, I think, recycled up to three times.
Yeah.
And had like incredible qualities of a synthetic and an organic material.
Yeah.
And I think they launched a test with Stella McCartney and Adidas. I could be misspeaking. but I think
it's a few.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
And I think that's it right now. I love seeing the innovation. Like people are trying new things. It's like, I think, you know, the word sustainable apparel may not be right, but you can't argue the way we're doing it right now is not sustainable.
No.
Like we have to be questioning and trying new things.
I mean, our system wasn't set up to be, whether it's fashion or any other, you know, products that we use, is like, we all just started making stuff and selling it and then it got globalized and then we all throw it away at the end. And, you know, so there's a whole change that has to happen. Like that's why we're seeing it happen. I think it's great that it is. Everyone needs to test and learn. I think, you know, we all have to be okay with some things, you know, you get partway through and then realize it's not working quite right, or the impact isn't quite what you thought it was going to be. And I've seen peers, you know, in this field, you know, at a conference or here and there in a meeting, and they're like, yeah, we did this for 10 years and then the impact wasn't what we thought and we're changing it now. But it's like, well, we never would have known that. And now you know that for everyone. And that's great.
And then sharing those
and learnings. Sharing it.
Yeah. I love that. Nike shared their sustainable practices and made it open source. Like we're not holding this close to the chest. We want everyone to be doing this, which it's like the only way it's for all of us. Like we all have to do better together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very fun part of being in this space, I think, is that it's super open. A lot of the work we do is pre-competitive, and the more we can collaborate, the more we can make this all happen. And I, you know, I've had colleagues over time who are like, oh my gosh, you can't say that to someone at this other company.
Right.
Like, you don't understand. Yeah. Like sustainability.
This is different.
Like, we're very open because you need to be, because how else can I learn? Like the waste of all of our time if I can't call someone at, you know, a peer or a competitor company even and learn from them. And often you find, oh, okay, we're all doing the same thing and we're experiencing some of the same challenges. So like, how can we better align on this next piece of collaboration that we need. And that's really cool.
And it's like, it's the choice as well of long-term impact versus short-term sales. So it's like, collectively, how can we all do this a little bit better for the health of our planet and each other versus just, okay, I have to win this quarter. Which it's a hard balance too, because it's still business.
Yeah. Well, a lot of this work doesn't happen only in a quarter, you know, for better or worse. So at least we're always thinking about, you know, what's going to get done in 6 months, or what can we get done in the next year or two? How can we plan for risks that are, you know, really far down the way and hard to quantify? You know, it's real. So, you know, trying to even just seed that, I think, in everyone's head. So we all start thinking about something that could happen in 5 or 10 years and plan ahead. And that's, I think that's cool. You can start to see innovation come from that of, if you start to realize long-term risk, then it can help motivate, I think, shorter-term, you know, motivation for different innovative ideas.
I love it. It's so exciting. And I think we're seeing expedited innovation due to COVID, which you mentioned is like, you're in Kansas, I'm in California, we're on a Zoom call. We're in mid-December, we're 9 months into this. I'd love to just chat about how have you seen the industry impacted from COVID? Like, I mean, obviously the retail and apparel industry is devastated. But it's also caused probably a new awareness of the potential harms of the apparel industry. What are you seeing? Like, how are you seeing, you know, priority shift or have you seen?
You know, there are some parts that have been, you know, hard to watch or like important but difficult things to learn that we as an industry have learned, you know, as we look at how our system is set up and who has power and who doesn't. And, you know, how are we making sure that people are taken care of, whether it's here in North America or it's somewhere else in the world. And I hope that that's going to lead to better buying practices over time, and, you know, ways of understanding that, you know, what a customer does here or a business does here impacts, you know, human beings, people, often women, but just people in general, in other countries who probably are, you know, living in a lot harder way than we are here, where, you know, that income,
absolutely,
as small as it might seem to be, is obviously critical for them and their family. So I think the connectedness is really clear. And maybe that's where I've seen something positive in COVID is like, oh man, we realize so much that our actions have an impact on other people. And I, you know, I hope we would all have known that before, but it certainly is more clear, you know, just literally because of COVID. But you can expand that. And it's like, yeah, what I do, you know, impacts the world, it impacts the climate, it impacts other people. And I think the commitment has stayed pretty strong, I guess, when I'm looking across, you know, my industry. It's like, we're not, people aren't backing away from goals that they've set. I think as we all figure out how to report for this year, you know, I do a lot of reporting, of course, of progress and metrics, you know, related to CSR and sustainability in my company. And it's like, oh, I don't know how I'm going to track and measure everything. You know, I'm still figuring that out. And I think those questions will continue in the coming months as all of our fiscal years end is, you know, gosh, this year was not normal. So what I can report as far as progress or not, it's just not really comparable to other years.
Everything's different.
Everything's different for this year. You know, the ways we're using bags, the way we were shopping online, like the materials we use, and everyone had to pivot super quickly. So anyway, that's a little aside. But, you know, everyone's commitments, I think customer expectations are only higher. Customer expectations have not changed, you know, that we need to be making choices for the greater good, which I'd love. I'd love to see that. And I think one, you know, we talk sometimes about what people can do and, okay, maybe you can buy a product made from better materials. But I think a big thing you can do is like, tell the places where you shop, tell them what you want, you know, even don't say, hey, I'm never going to shop with you unless you change this. Like, eh, that's okay. But I actually think saying, I love your company, I love shopping with you, you know, like it's my favorite place to go. Yeah, please do this thing. Like, I think it's the right thing to do. And I would be so excited and, you know, about that. I think that kind of interaction is really meaningful, even when it's one off. I mean, gosh, like sit and do a letter writing campaign with some friends over Zoom and just send some emails or physical letters. I don't know where the physical letters would go right now if folks are working from home, so they might just get lost. So maybe emails for now. But go on and say, like, are you sourcing more things like this? Or would you ever think of changing the way that you package things? Or, you know, just give me less packaging. I don't need the special bubble mailer glossier, you know, just give me a paper envelope, whatever it is.
And I do love they just added an option.
They did, I know.
Minimal packaging. And I was like, I couldn't support them because of the packaging. And I was like, oh, I really want the boy brow, but I don't want the packaging. And I loved I could order it without. And it's such a small thing.
Should I wrote them. I wrote them a letter last year. Should I take credit for that?
I think you can. Well, and that was going to be my question for you, Chelsea. I think, you know, same as our government, it's like,
yeah.
I also think we're in this culture of shaming and like, you know, blocking a company, but instead, you know, and I'd love to know your point of view. Like, you work for a large retailer. Do you listen to those letters? Do you listen to those comments on Facebook or Instagram that are like, hey, you know, would you consider buying blank, or what about repairing? Mm-hmm. You know, how much weight does that have at a large company?
Yeah, I think, you know, they can go different directions, like where those comments go and flow. Some of them come all the way to me. Usually for me, it's like, yeah, you're preaching to the choir. I want to do all that stuff already. You know, I'm working as fast as I can, which is why I love when people reach out, you know, to companies and say what they want or say what they're loving. If there's a change that has been positive, like, just encourage everyone, like, tell them it was right, give them a pat on the back, and let them know that you've noticed. I think that's really helpful. You know, for folks that are making hard choices, they've been doing work to source a new kind of box or a new kind of a bag, and they've been researching this for months, and they had to make financial choices along the way about how much more they're willing to pay for it and able to pay, and is that okay? I think Madewell did some products earlier this year where they said, you know, these have more sustainable raw materials, and like, they cost a little bit more as a result, and they just are trying to explain that, like, hey,
and like,
it's just gonna cost a little bit more. Mm-hmm.
And education's a huge part of it. I think it's like, no one's been maliciously doing anything. A lot of it's just like, hey, people didn't know. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge education piece, and just the more piece that you said at the beginning, it's like, keep trying, keep testing things, because changing a company's supply chain and operations is not easy. Mm-hmm. But trying and making small wins, it makes a huge impact.
Yeah, I think being understanding that change can sometimes take months or a year or more years. Yeah, is because like it might seem so easy on the outside to just say, like, you know, switch your bag, or, you know, tell us precisely which factory this came from and who made it. And it's like, gosh, it seems like it should be that easy. And sometimes the tools on the inside they're not up to that challenge. And it's not because anyone is trying to hide anything. It's just that there's so many details that need to get tracked by a ton of different people based all over the world. And it's maybe, it doesn't fit in the system you're using, you know, whatever the different tools and technologies are. I mean, how many of us work in a place and have worked in places where you're like, wait, that system doesn't talk to that system? Like, oh no.
Right.
Yeah. That happens all the time. And so then you have to figure out how to get the systems to connect and make sure someone has time to do it. Just takes a long time. And it's not for lack of trying. But
there's so many different
push. Yeah, it's helpful.
And there's so many different pieces to evaluate. Like, I worked at REI and worked with their sustainability team a bit. And it's what sounds simple and you think is the right thing, you then dig into it and it's like, well, actually, that's more harmful and is going to cause more damage than the simple thing you thought was the solution. And everything has implications. So it is just like, and you need so many different stakeholders to help make any real change. So it's a lot of like working with different people, education.
Mm-hmm. There's an old article and research about bags, like reusable bags. I feel like it might be in like a Quartz article from like 2018 or something. It's a little old. But talking about like the impact of a plastic bag versus like a reusable tote. And like, what if that reusable tote is made of organic cotton? And it's just like, no, like never do that. It's, you know, you have to use like
10,000 times.
Right? Yeah, like the amount, and like the extra effort that's gone in with organic cotton to make that work. It's just like, like this doesn't, or, sorry, it's not organic, it's regular cotton. If you're using traditional cotton on a reusable tote, is like the amount of water that has gone into this to make this bag, you know, is just astounding. And, you know, I'm not a proponent of plastic bags. You know, I'm here in Kansas, you know, I'll whisper to you, trying to get my parents to, you know, like recycle the things they should be recycling. I'm calling them on the internet because they deserve it.
Sorry, Chelsea's parents.
I bought contact solution when I got here. I've got the box, you know, folded up to take back to Seattle with me. I'm like, I just can't, right. I'm not going to throw away the stuff that can so easily be recycled. It just kills me. Whatever. But you know, the one plastic bag versus this cotton tote that actually, like, it's so much more resource intensive. And if there's, like, don't do it. Like, don't get any more. I never want another tote in my life. I'll tell you that. Oh. I have 10. I've got 15. I've got a whole bag of bags. Like, please, no, I never want another one because I have to use all of these ones 10,000 times, you know?
Well, and I think that's the thing. Like, companies will give you, like, hey, be green. Here's a reusable tote. And it's like, no. Like, the other day, I just put all my groceries back in the cart and unloaded them one by one into my car because I forgot my bags. I was like, I just can't. And I'm not going to buy another canvas tote, no. You know?
If you never have one, if you have none and you're making the switch for the first time, like, love it. Go buy yourself 5 totes 20. That you can keep in your purse or keep in your trunk of your car if you drive to the grocery store. Like, yeah, go get you 5 bags. That's awesome. Love it. But you don't need to keep buying. I don't need any more water bottles. I've got water bottles.
Yeah.
Got more water bottles than I can drink out of. So,
some of and the resources it takes to make those reusable water bottles. It's like,
totally.
I think that's the biggest thing in my mind is just be more mindful, like not just blindly buying things, but buying isn't bad. Like new things isn't necessarily bad. It's more just like, think about the need, think about what is the impact of this item? Are there other choices? You know, where should I buy from?
Yeah. Yep. I agree. And I mean, that's where it's kind of like, that is what we can all do on the day to day. I wouldn't claim to anyone that we're all going to save the planet by carrying our reusable bags. Like that would also be, I think, kidding ourselves. And that's where, you know, asking for that larger scale change or, you know, expecting different things from our, you know, government leadership. And, you know, we need all of this stuff at such a huge scale that each of our little efforts is important. And I think it helps keep you mindful. And then, you know, when it's time to ask for the big thing, like, well, I've been doing all this little stuff in my life. You know, I want to see this supported at a broader scale, you know, that there it can really connect through. And I love the idea that if you're buying a more sustainable product, it's signaling to the company that that's what you want. And that might encourage them, hopefully, to buy more of those items, find more things like that, that starts to push change through at scale. But I also think, you know, if you are making a lot of these efforts, if you're, you know, trying to drive less, if you're eating less meat, if you're, you know, trying not to take a bag that you're going to use for 8 seconds, you know, then forgive yourself. If you have to throw away a LaCroix can, you know, once in a while, if you've got some weird bunch of takeout food containers and like, guess what? There's not a way for you to recycle it at this moment. Like, forgive yourself because it's also, that's not the main driver.
I love that.
Is that too pessimistic? I think it's just like, I think some of us that care a lot about this can feel too much guilt. And I don't think that is helpful either.
Well, I find myself getting like climate anxiety almost. Yes. And there has to be like, it's like, I always say like, we don't need 10 people being perfect, you know, living off the land, riding your bike everywhere. We need millions of people making small changes, you know, like, it's like, yeah, you might be perfect, but actually the better thing would be like, hey, can you get a group of friends to all make a small change? You know, if everybody does just a little bit better, that's where we'll see a global impact. You know, it's like, I know you and I, like, we want to be perfect, but there has to be a forgiveness and permission too, because it's, you'll make yourself crazy.
Yes. Yeah. You'll never get out of bed, you know.
Right.
Like the most sustainable thing to do is just lay here and never move.
It feels bad.
And never eat.
And it's COVID and it's already hard. I can't feel bad about, I really just would like a cozy sweater. I don't want to feel guilty about it, you know?
Right.
Chelsea, you've given like so many great ideas and tips. And I know the work you do isn't easy. Like I've worked in the innovation space. Anytime you're trying to do something new in a large organization or just new in terms of you know, systems and processes is hard. But what keeps you motivated? Like, what's your motivation to work in this space?
Yeah, that's funny. I think I don't think about this probably every day. I personally am very interested in it. I think it's a really interesting and exciting space. I mean, I feel lucky to get to work with tons of smart people who care a lot. I mean, most of us, I feel like, God, we're all like criers if you really get down to it. You know, you can pull our emotional heartstrings because we do care a lot, even if we're making like pragmatic and strategic decisions and proposals on the day to day. Is like, I'm doing it because I personally care a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think getting to work in this kind of a role, and I should say, and we've talked about this before, is like, you don't have to have sustainability in your job title to do this work. Mm. Like, it's important, actually. Yeah, that's not the only way, because we need so many people working on this with their expertise and skill set. But you know, you just can feel so proud of what you've gotten done. And it never feels like it's enough. Every day, it never feels like it's enough because it all feels so urgent. But, you know, if you look back and you've gotten, you know, you're doing this work, it's like, wow, well, this was progress. That's something we weren't doing before. And like, here's a new way that I've helped other people think about it. That's very exciting. It's really fun to watch. It's been so fun to watch the like momentum on all of this grow and keep going. And I guess I find it encouraging. There is the, you know, don't want to get out of bed, climate anxiety, but then you get on a call and you're like, man, there's 20 brilliant people here doing crazy research and presenting it. And whether I'm doing the work or not, they're going to keep going. And that's cool. Like, it's cool to be a part of a group that's pushing for that kind of progress.
Oh, thank you. I love it.
Don't you agree? Like, you do, 100%. You're doing it too. Yeah.
No, 100%. And, you know, when you know, probably 8 years ago, no one knew it. You didn't ever heard sustainable apparel. But then I think I started learning about, like, I've always been a fashionista. I love, I mean, I had a subscription to W when I was 8 years old. Like, I love clothing. I have been a shopper. Mm-hmm. And then I think my eyes were open about 6-7 years ago to like, oh, the clothing actually has an environmental and human impact.
Right.
And at first it was daunting. But then what I realized and what gave me kind of my motivation to work in this space was there's nothing but areas to improve.
Totally there agree. Is
unlimited potential to do better. And so I just, that's where I get excited is like, you see a company making clothing out of used fishing nets, or you see someone breaking down and recycling synthetic material so they don't have to take out, you know, more oil. Or, you know, really cool, beautiful companies starting resale programs. And it's like, I see so much progress and innovation in this space that it's like, it isn't this mountain that's insurmountable. Instead, it's like, there are really smart people, motivated people who care working on this. And that's what's exciting. So yeah, I would totally agree with you. There's just, and to see progress, it isn't like, I mean, the sadness of watching our forest burn this summer. It's like, what can we do? It's like, it's all tied together, but we're seeing change, which is like so exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I hope we'll only see it faster. I hope even as we come out of COVID, I mean, I hope that a lot of the new jobs that keep growing in this country and elsewhere, but even just in the US, you know, are more green jobs, things related to green energy, you know, like as we just try to make shifts that are really at a big, big scale. Super excited to see that.
I love it. I'd love if maybe just rapid fire, you and I can share a few resources for people that are interested in like learning more or like, what are some cool Instagram accounts to follow? So yeah, like start with any, and feel free to like grab your phone. Cause I
know
like,
I'm going to have to scroll. Like they just feed those to me. So I don't know. I just absorb it. I thought about two things before we got on the phone, which were some books. I'm reading this book that I'm super into right now. I'm only about halfway through. It's not about fashion, but it is about supply chains. It's called The Secret Life of Groceries. I've learned a great deal about Trader Joe's and Whole Foods, as well as about some other topics. I've been a little worried about transportation for a while, like the trucking industry. I think I heard it might have been Planet Money or it was a podcast, Freakonomics maybe. I don't think it was The Daily. These are some of my regular listens right now in COVID. But you know, the dynamics and the money and the way that it all works in trucking, just like long haul trucking is really, really concerning. You know, for the people who drive those trucks and the ways that sometimes they are hired and stuck in their jobs and not making any money despite the amount of work they're doing. it's fascinating and really troubling. So I would say that's just an interesting area for all of us to learn about. All of our stuff is getting to us on trucks, so it's relevant for everybody. So I hope that industry, I hope we'll see some changes happening. Anyway,
I was going to say it's a little old school, but the cradle to cradle, just around the circular design, is fascinating. Mm-hmm. And just like a good first foray into like a different way of thinking and designing.
Definitely. Definitely that. I always recommend Green Giants by Freya Williams, who is great. Yep. I think she has written a new book. I'm not sure if it's out yet, but I think she has been writing a new book as well. But that book is really cool to think about some companies that have invested and made, you know, I think it's that they've each made at least $1 billion off of a product that was more sustainable. Yep. It's pretty cool.
And traditional companies who have made massive impacts.
Yep.
And then I've been finding the Ellen MacArthur Foundation has like unbelievable free videos, resources, tools. Yeah. So I think that's where, if you're curious, that there's like, just dive in.
Have you read?
We saw each other. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, have you read Donut Economics?
No.
Okay. I haven't
either. I'm like jotting these down.
It's sitting here on my, it's sitting on my table next to me. I brought it home to try to read over the holidays. It's been out for a year or maybe more. I'm super excited to read it, and I think it's going to be really relevant. So hopefully everyone else thinks so too. I don't know.
I'm adding it to my, my Libby queue. I've got my library app.
I love that app.
It's so good. Cause I'm just like, someone mentions a book and I put it in my queue.
Definitely.
I was going to, and you've been a speaker before, but the Portland Sustainable Fashion Forum, for those of you who don't know it, it started as like an in-person, you know, seminar workshop in Portland, and then they've pivoted in an amazing way and brought in speakers and are doing, you know, different podcasts and sessions. So it's a great learning database as well.
Yep. Yeah, they're doing a fantastic job. What else? Oh, I think another would be Global Fashion Agenda. If you're looking for free resources and kind of reporting on our industry, the fashion industry anyway, they do a report with BCG every year, and it's all of the top, you know, most concerning, often kind of issues, but kind of current topics happening in fashion. And it definitely has to do with sustainability in this space. So it's good informational resource for folks. There's a ton of resources out there.
So much. And I found if you just start by following one, like fashion, you know, Fashion Revolution or something, you then.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, get on Fashion Revolution for Instagram. Yeah, go there. I've been following a newer edition is Future Earth. I like their infographics and like statistics have been really good. Once you get in that on Instagram, it'll just feed it to you all day.
It's an endless hole. You can rabbit hole. You can go down. Have you used anything like the Good On You app?
I have it on my phone. Yeah, I have it on my phone. I've met with them. I personally am not using it that often, but I like what they're doing. I think what they're doing is really cool. I've talked with them some about the standards, you know, by which they're qualifying brands in there. I think that's great. It's a good resource. Definitely download it if you're interested. I also have the web browser add-on extension. What do you call it? I don't know, where something pops up on your browser. I use Chrome. And it's the Done Good. Good. Like browser extension. I'm probably using the wrong words, but it offers you go to a website and it suggests other places to shop. I'm not sure that it has changed my, you know, choice. If I'm going to buy something, you know, and I'm like, well, I am buying this thing from West Elm and like it was fair trade, you know, and it might mean that extension might be saying, you know, they haven't qualified the whole brand or the whole company as better. But if you know that you're going to go buy something that's fair trade from Target, I mean, frankly, like Target has a ton of great products that are maybe fair trade certified or Okotex certified. You know, Nordstrom has products like this. West Elm has products like this, you know, sustainably sourced woods. And it's like, you can choose those things yourself. So like, I don't think you have to abide by what the extension tells you, but it, you know, might cause you to stop and think a second time.
That's great. And and I think like there's so many new certifications out there. It's hard to even navigate, you know, is Blue Sign good? Is Fair Trade good? Is organic better? But just starting to recognize some of those can be a really useful thing as well. Do you feel like purchasers, consumers mm-hmm. are starting to understand those certifications, or are they more like industry terms right now?
I guess my inclination is to think that, I mean, interested customers, yes, definitely. Interested consumers, sure. I think so, do know more, but we also are not normal shoppers. And I get that. Like we're, yeah. you and I don't shop in a normal average way anymore. Like we shop in a weird yeah. way, but, but yeah, I guess because everyone, or not everyone, but many companies are starting to use and include these terms, these certifications, I think maybe I would not assume that every average shopper is logging in and they know exactly what it means when they see the symbol. And that's why there is risk. Like there is risk of greenwashing, you know, if it's not a good certification or if it's something that has some question marks, there can be risk there that someone takes it for truth and says, oh, this is so much better because it has this symbol on it. And it, maybe it's not. So I think you want to go maybe to a company that has done a lot of work to be transparent about why something yes. is more sustainable, what it means. Ideally, they've defined it. And I, you know, frankly, Nordstrom has done this. You know, we have a sustainable, it's called sustainable style, like a shopping category of products that are more sustainable with, you know, better materials or made in more responsible facilities, things like Bluesign that we were just saying. But you know, like other large companies have done this too. IKEA, again, like West Elm and Target. Who else? REI. I mean, you can barely pick up a product at REI without seeing, you know, some right. additional certification. In fact, I know they just said that by, I think, 2030, every product that they sell is going to have, you know, a mark like that or a qualifier like that, which is really exciting to see. Like, I love seeing the outdoor industry setting an example for everyone else. It's a different space and it's a slightly different customer that I think expects and requires it more. But it really, you know, sets a path for everybody else. So I don't know. I would Thank expect you. A lot of transparency. Yeah. If you're shopping like that, I would say look for transparency and look for more information that shows the company is really trying to make sure it's credible, it's authentic, it's true.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's right. Cause just making an ad that's like, hey, this is our green collection.
I don't like that.
And then, and then you start to dig in and you're like, oh, everything else you do is really bad, but you're trying to benefit from this. So greenwashing, thanks for bringing that up. I wanted your point of view on that. But I think the transparency, like I look at Vega sneakers, they have a huge portion of their website just dedicated to mm-hmm. like education mm-hmm. of what these different terms are. And they're very clear with like, we're not perfect yet, but here's all right. the things we're setting right. out to learn about. So I think if a website doesn't have like, here's our sustainability terms, here's our, mm-hmm. you know, sustainability report, here's the things we're doing, you should question it a little bit.
I agree. Yeah. I think that companies that are doing this well, you know, it means that they're able to show that they know what they're talking about. And I don't think you can expect anyone to be perfect. Like there's always room to grow. You know, I've seen colleagues at conferences and it's like, oh, this company is doing a fabulous job with the products they make. But the person that I saw at the conference is like, well, I'm here to learn about packaging because that's what's next. Like we need to figure out packaging now. And sometimes it does need to happen one thing at a time. Yeah. It can't always be everything at once. And it's like, and this company I'm thinking of, like they do a really great job and they're probably doing a great job on packaging now. That was a couple of years ago. But it was like, oh, funny. Like you, or actually this, I'm thinking of one particular person. I saw her also yeah. at a UN General Assembly meeting. And she's like, we're Amazing. Trying to figure out how we should connect to the sustainable development goals. And it's just like, yeah, one thing at a time. Like, okay, great. Like we've yes. made some great progress. We have processes in place so that it will be a sustained and sustainable, you know, project internally to keep going, whether I'm personally working on it or not. And like, now I'm going to turn my attention to this thing and like try to make that into a systemized yes. effort internally, get it to stick. Because part of it's getting it to stick for sure.
Yep. And you can't do it all overnight. And it's like, you're going to try certain things that make a great impact and mm-hmm. others that are like, okay, well that didn't work.
Mm-hmm. Or dynamics just, change. Like right now, yeah. I guess COVID, you know, well, number one, there's been a lot more we were talking about bags probably too much, but there have been like single use bags because grocery stores couldn't let people use reusable bags for a while. And now with restaurant delivery happening, so much restaurant delivery or takeout or whatever, and it's like they're using maybe paper bags and there's like basically a paper shortage. Like there right. are shortages happening in weird ways because of all these systems connect and suddenly we're using a lot more paper bags to carry all our stuff around, to go pick up our dinner that otherwise just would have been given to us on a plate.
Right. And I mean, like, but that right there is a tension of like, I want to support my local restaurants. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to go under, but it's heartbreaking when I bring home a bag of containers that I'm going to have to get rid of and just throw away or recycle.
Totally.
So it's just, it's this, COVID has created such interesting tensions.
I think about it with even like all the medical gear. We're seeing this about PPE, masks. I mean, every time you see a mask like on the ground in a parking lot, it's like, oh gosh. And it's like, well, gosh, I wouldn't, you know, we need these things. Like this medical gear, this PPE is like absolutely critical. But gosh, it's creating a new waste stream, a whole lot of new disposable single-use stuff. And, you know, everything has to be in balance. I think that's where you have to take a step back and look at the biggest impacts. And that's probably things like oil and gas. It's, you know, it's things that are driving huge amounts of emissions. And like, you know what, the masks are a necessity. And, you know,
and for right now, this is the reality.
Yep.
Ah,
I don't know.
Well, Chelsea, I think I could talk to you.
I know we've gone probably. No, your listeners don't want to listen for this long. It's too far.
they're like, we want more. This is so good. I went through all my questions. You gave us so many good ideas. I'm so excited. And, I'll just leave with like, thank you for the work you do personally and professionally to just help make an impact and drive for, you know, change and being more sustainable wherever we can.
Thanks for tuning in to my latest adventure in understanding the story behind the clothes we wear. I truly believe we can have beautiful things without harm. If you liked this episode, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave a review. As always, the story continues on our Instagram page at It Matters Wear, WEAR. Give us a follow and join the conversation. Join us next time as we continue our exploration behind the scenes and pull the threads on the stories behind our clothing.